Hey guys, welcome back to Reality TV. I have a big show for you because we had a huge week of new shows. Today, I'll be talking about 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way, Married at First Sight, and I'm a little afraid to say this right now. I don't want to jinx it, but it may be the best season of Love After Lockup ever. Now, before I jump into that, there's a couple things that are happening right now in the shallow end, and I guess not so shallow end of the news. Of course, we have Kanye, who just went absolutely batshit crazy. And what concerns me the most about whatever it is that he's pulling or whatever it is that he's going through is that he's taking away from Britney. I'm not even a huge Britney stan, or I don't really follow her super closely, but it's pretty concerning, these things that are coming out about all of her Instagram videos. One of the things I saw on TikTok, because of course I'm, you know, middle-aged and a little bored here and there, I saw one of these things on TikTok where this girl zoomed in, and during this one video, she's holding a white hat and she's pointing to something on the hat. You can barely even notice that she's pointing to it. But when she does, and you zoom in, supposedly the word help is written on it. I know, goosebumps, right? So, I mean, Kanye is wrong for a lot of things, one of them being pretty serious in that I think we all need to help Britney. Now, someone else who is just as shallow and narcissistic as Kanye is Giselle. I feel like she's ruined the name Giselle for anyone who was born after her, who didn't even know that they were going to share a name with her, because she is so freaking insufferable. Tom Brady shared this whole family montage portrait thing to wish her a happy birthday. And one of the little captions where I think it was UK Daily Mail was talking about his posts and everything, it said, "The beauty and her two kids looked sun-kissed as they posed outdoors." Okay, fuck off with that. But Tom posted this post and it says, "Happy 40th birthday, at Giselle. You are the sunshine of my life. That's why I'll always be around. You are the apple of my eye. Forever you'll stay in my heart." Obviously using the lyrics from Stevie Wonder's song. But really, if you love your wife so much, do you really need to go on social media and make this disgusting display of love? And I realize that that makes me sound like a real hater and a troll, but it's a bit much, right? Well, then Giselle followed that up, and I didn't know she was a twin. Did you know this? Well, she is, and she has a fraternal twin, so they're not identical. And of course, this twin is always going to be in the shadow of her supermodel sister twin, supermodel twin sister, whatever the hell. Her name is Patty. It's Patricia. Now, there's nothing wrong with the name Patricia, the name Patty, but when you have a supermodel twin sister named Giselle and your name is Patty, you're already losing at life, basically. So this is what she wrote. "Today, Patty and I get to celebrate 4 decades of being alive on this amazing planet. How lucky I was to be born with my twin and best friend." Well, yeah, you are fucking lucky because you're the pretty twin. You're the supermodel twin. She continues and says, "I'm so grateful for all the people who have been a part of my journey. Ooh. My husband, my family, especially my loving children, my friends, and so many others who I never got to meet but who have supported me through all these years. I'm grateful for every experience that has helped me shape who I am today." Mainly the fact that she got all the pretty genes. Okay, just want to hit her so hard in the face. She's someone I just want to walk up to and just sucker punch in the boob. I can't help it. It's just something about her face and her energy. I can't take it. Now, there is someone else who is not a supermodel, but she is in the news today because she was supposed to be going to court soon. I am talking about the one and only Theranos founder, Elizabeth Holmes, who will not go on trial this fall because, turns out, I think it's like over 150, 170 maybe witnesses who were supposed to come and be witnesses for the prosecution, testify against her. They cannot be called into court because of coronavirus. So now they've delayed her court case. Now, my question is, why can't they just Skype in or video in? Because Elizabeth Holmes herself is Skyping into some of these things. So what the hell? I don't understand why she gets to wait until, let me look up the date here, April 2021. So she gets to live basically free. I'm sure there's some sort of maybe flight risk thing kind of put upon her, but she's got another year where she can just go to whatever baseball game she's going to. She's got some new boyfriend now. I just think it's bullshit, but guess what? She has retired the black turtleneck, and instead she's opting for a dark gray blazer and pants. Good to see she's moving on to softer shades, and she's also gotten rid of the red lipstick and the bold eyeliner. A very natural look. I don't even think she had chapstick on. She's pretty, but whatever. I mean, I'm so in for this Elizabeth Holmes trial. I would actually love if they did a reenactment. Remember how they did that for Michael Jackson's trial? That would be incredible. Who could they get to play her? Oh, there's a lot of actresses that could do a good Elizabeth Holmes. January Jones. Ooh, I was just going to say Kristen Bell, but as much as I like her, she and Dax are really driving me nuts with their "We're imperfectly perfect. We're so happy." I don't buy it. Okay, let's see. Oh, Total Request Podcast, you guys. I hate pitching you and trying to get you to sign up on Patreon, but honestly, there's such good stuff going on Patreon right now. On my Patreon, that's patreon.com/realityvpod, whatever shows I'm not covering during the main show. So this week, I will not be covering 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After because I'm already talking about three shows here. That is already up over on Patreon, so I'll be rotating those throughout the couple weeks that we have all these shows going on. And I just recapped Marriage Bootcamp Family Edition with Amanda. Those are always up on Patreon and on Total Request Podcast. This week, we are going to be covering a show called Obsessive Compulsive Cleaners. So you can only imagine my paranoia that's going to be going on. And I assigned Amanda Extreme Forensics starring herself. She has the starring role as the murder victim in Extreme Forensics, and she does not want to watch it, but I'm making her do it because that's what good friends do. You know, we just torture each other and we can laugh at each other and have a good time with it. So check that out. Last week, we covered an episode of Smash. We also recapped the 2002 episode of MTV Cribs starring Mariah Carey. Oh, yes. I'll just say her apartment is not as glamorous as I remember it being. So check that out. That's at patreon.com/trpod. Thank you so much to my newest Patreon subscribers, Michelle, Savannah, Caitlin, and Christina. This week's episode that you're listening to right here is all thanks to them. And without any further lead up or transition, let's just jump right into Married at First Sight because I've been waiting almost a week to talk about it. This is the very first episode of the new season of Married at First Sight New Orleans, and it looks pretty damn good. Now, I'm going to say right off the bat, these episodes can absolutely be cut down to an hour. So if you are new to the show, if you have never watched it, know that there's a lot of catch up between scenes and they give you a lot of background information. But once you get into it, like the first episode or two, wow. Or just listen to this recap here and then go back and you can fast forward through all the boring shit and look for all the funny details that I'm going to tell you about right now. So first of all, we catch up with Pastor Cal, who you know is my arch nemesis. I despise him even more because although he's getting paid probably a lot of money to be doing this show, certainly more than I'm making right now, I can afford to buy a fucking microphone, but he's sitting there in front of his freaking laptop sounding like he's in a tin can. You couldn't go spring for even, I was going to say Radio Shack. You can tell how old I am. You know, go on Best Buy online if you're quarantining and find a cheap little microphone you can hook up. You are being paid far too much for this show, sir. Now, first couple. Yeah, I guess we'll just go couples, right? Let's talk about Amelia and Bennett. Amelia is a very artistic med student. She's 27, and she's given the title The Driven Dreamer. She is going to be matched with, or she is matched with, Bennett, who is an artistic director. He's called the Romantic Thespian, and he's 28. My first impression of, well, let's talk about Bennett first since they introduced him first. First impression absolutely was, oh my God, what the fuck? Where did they find this guy? He could be normal looking or maybe even, dare I say, a little, I'm not going to say attractive, but he could be more normal looking if he got a haircut and took off that disgusting, greasy baseball hat that he's wearing. He has never thrown that in the washing machine. You can just see the years of sweat and grease in that thing. It's disgusting. You can smell it. Now, when we meet Bennett, he's directing three people on stage, one of them being his sister and some other guy. I don't know what they were doing because all I could focus on was some very serious thespian or improver who is violently fisting a bowl of chocolate pudding. And I am not exaggerating by any means. His hand is in this bowl, jerking it off, and then he freaking licks it off his hand. You have got to be kidding me. Get the fuck out of here with that. That's not art, you guys. If you licking food off your hand in a small theater that seats maybe four people and you're calling that art, you are taking yourself far too seriously. Now, Bennett is not only an artistic director, a theater director. He says he is, oh, there's a whole list of them. Let me read them off here. Self-employed. He is a theater artist, a freelance writer, a pedicabber who wears a three-piece suit while he's doing it, mind you, and a landscape architect helper. And Bennett used to talk to trash cans, and he wears a misshapen woman's ring on his right hand, along with a very narrow, thinned-out leather pair of mandals. So that just puts the whole picture together for you. Now, let's meet Amelia, the driven dreamer. Her ethos in life is to live crazy adventures, climb on top of people, walk on yarn between trees, and not wash or brush her hair, and one-up John Popper by adding in some drums. She's got a guitar, a harmonica in her mouth. Maybe she had like cymbals in one hand and a tambourine in the other while she's doing the drums. I don't know. Now, in saying all that, even though she is super kooky and artsy-fartsy, I grow to kind of love her, okay? Or she grows on me. She's incredibly smart. She's a doctor, hello. But she also seems very sincere. And I like how, of course, she's progressive. She's open to having a relationship with a man or marrying someone who wants to stay home and raise kids while she's out slaying the shit out of life. So I gotta love that. I have the feeling, though, that she may be a little more than friends with some of her female friends, though, because she was holding hands and playing fingies with the same friend that she was doing like airplane on that she was climbing on earlier. And then the one friend in the bridal boutique who had that amazing curly hair, she had like gap between her teeth, she dove headfirst under her dress like she's been there before, if you know what I'm saying. And that's fine. Nothing wrong with that, but I just think maybe Amelia's soon-to-be husband, Bennett, may need to be open to the fact that Amelia likes to play with her friends. Now, time to check in with Dr. Pepper for, I think, one of two appearances she makes in this entire 2 hours. I hope she's doing well. She's also at home. She has a much better film and microphone setup than Dr. Cal, and she's got a giant alpaca tapestry in the background. How did we know that she's got an alpaca tapestry? It's just, it's like something we knew in our heart she always had. I bet you she's got some dream catchers above her bed too. Moving on to Woody, who is a teacher and a coach. He's 30 years old. And Amani is a nonprofit organizer known as Miss Calm, Cool, and Collected. She's 29. My first impression when we meet Amani first is that she really does not seem to be very calm, cool, and collected to me. Amani comes across as very strong, outspoken, likely to say if she's unhappy about something. It's just the vibe I get, and that's not bad. I just wouldn't call her calm, cool, and collected whatsoever. I also think she looks, don't kill me on this one, she looks a lot older than 29. I'm sorry. It could be the style of the clothes that she wears, but she looks much closer to 40 than 30 to me. Now, Woody, I think he might be maybe 5'2 with platform lifts in his shoes. And when we meet him, he's walking next to Miles, who is another groom who we'll talk about in just a bit. So Woody looked like a freaking minion walking next to him because he's a good 2.5 feet shorter. I think Woody is probably a very nice guy. He seems like he's funny. He is Mr. Life of the Party after all, but I was out as soon as I saw this stupid montage of him. Everything in his wardrobe is shiny. He had on, I don't even know how you would describe it, embroidered, embossed, glossy, shimmery. I don't even know how to describe it. It was just this ugly, cheap, shiny man blazer. And then he put on a hat. Hell to the no, no, no. I told you I'm watching way too much TikTok, but listen, Woody is just doing it all wrong. He can embrace his height or lack thereof without having to distract with shiny things. The one time he is not wearing something that is shiny, however, he goes the complete opposite direction and he's wearing, it actually looks like one of Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen's old lady coats. It's like this old wool camel colored coat. And I get the vibe that he's going for, like a bluesy soul man or something. Or maybe he just has an old soul vibe to him, if that makes any sort of sense. Like, I can picture exactly what Woody will look like and sound like and what he will be like when he's 75, 80 years old. He's just the kind of guy who's, sounds terrible, he's just like meant to be the short, skinny, hyper friend. Oh, I know it sounds terrible, but I'm just getting that vibe. All right, here we go. Brett and Olivia. Brett works in IT. He's 35, and Olivia is a nurse, and they give her the title of Miss Sugar and Spice, and she's 30. Let's talk about Olivia first. My first impression of her is just beige. I didn't get anything from her, really, just kind of normal, sweet, and that's it. Brett, on the other hand, oh, let's get ready for it. First thought that came to my head seeing his face was just, hate him. And there's a reason why he calls himself the serial dater. It's because women will go on a date with him and within 2 seconds, they figure out exactly what Brett's deal is and they next him and they never see him again. They ghost him. Brett strikes me as the kind of guy, I know you're going to know exactly what I'm saying. He's the guy who peaked in high school. He was probably one of like the cool jocks, but now he thinks he still is the shit, even though he graduated 20 years ago. When I buy catnip, it's for us. When I boil 6 sweet potatoes, it's for us. When I forget to brush my plaque-covered teeth that look like one long fuzzy bench, it's for us. This guy is so full of shit. He decided that he was going to come up with this sort of explanation of he wants purpose. Everything he does, he wants it to be for his marital unit with his wife. Whatever, man. He's so transparent and such a fucking dork. And this confidence, this cockiness that he has, obviously it comes from insecurity, but it's almost as if he's broken through to the other side And now he truly is cocky and he's just in douche town USA population one, Brett. Now the juxtaposition of them showing Brett's overconfidence and him picking out a tux compared to Olivia on the other side of the salon, who is so frustrated. She's self-conscious. She just doesn't feel good about herself and her body. That just spells heartache and disaster. Why would they ever put these two together? Now, let's move on to our next couple, Henry, who is a healthcare recruiter. Jesus, that just threw me for a loop. Healthcare recruiter. And Christina, who is a flight attendant, also known as the Princess Bride. He's 35, she's 30. First impression, Christina seems kind of boring. She's obviously got some issues that she's got to work out, maybe toes the line on kind of a depressive personality. Not that that's a bad thing, but she just seems to be on the verge of tears at all times. And she is really into flowers, guys, like flora and fauna, the shit to her, but not roses. It must be exotic flowers. And someday she hopes to receive even one flower because no one's ever given her flowers before. I don't get it. I can't identify with this flower thing at all because I think flowers are a cop-out, to be honest. It's an easy gift, and then I'm dealing with smelly water for the next 5 days. Now, Henry is known as the reserved gentleman, and he just seems too normal to be on this show. I would have actually matched Henry with Olivia if I had my way, but, you know, I'm no expert. I'm no Dr. Pepper. Henry just seems really sweet, and I think that says a lot that he's got the same best friend from kindergarten because, okay, this is going to be a big generality here. In general, most men don't have a lot of the same skills to maintain friendships as women do, and I think that's kind of our society's fault, but that's a whole other show that we could have. I just think it's really sweet and it says a lot about Henry. Now, Karen and Miles. This is going to be an interesting couple here. Karen has an unfortunate name for 2020. She is a consultant. She's known as Ms. Reservations. And Miles is an education worker. I don't know if he's a teacher or what. It's kind of a weird title they gave him, education worker. He's 26, so he's younger than her, and he's known as Mr. Young and Ready. My first impression of Karen is that she's gorgeous, very pretty. I like her sweet personality. One of her aunts, or it could be her mom, this is going to be a real deep cut here, looks exactly like Sister Patterson. I'm talking about New York, like I Love New York, you know, the one who spit on Pumpkin or Pumpkin spit on her or whatever. She looks scary as hell, but I like Karen. Now, Miles, the experts always like a groom who is an education worker or a teacher. I swear to God, we have a male teacher every single season just so we can have someone who we're like, oh, he likes kids. So Miles checks all those boxes off. I am all for it. I am falling hard for Miles. He's adorable. I hate the hoop nose ring and his hoop earrings, but he is super cute. Now, I think the best way to do this is to talk about, oh, you know what? I'm going to talk about the bachelor party first and then the bachelorette party. And then we really cut off very quickly at the wedding days. So this bachelor party, I will get to Brett's douchebaggery in a moment. But first, I got to talk more about Miles because, oh, damn it, when he said he loved Bennett and he started getting like a, not a bro crush, almost like, I'm helping him. He's going to be my friend because he needs a helping hand. My heart, as Angelica would say, my heart went boom. I am so into Miles. He is so damn sexy. And the sweeter he is to Bennett, I am like taking my bra off, not because it's the end of the day, but because damn Miles. They go to this house that is either an Airbnb or someone's friend's house. And immediately when Bennett walks in, there are two strippers who have the most awesome asses I could ever dream of. I have a flat one and I would love a little curve. So I was like, tell me whatever kind of squats you're doing because I need to do them. But Miles is cheering on Bennett because Bennett is dancing with them. But I think Bennett pee-peed in his pants. I don't think he spilled his beer because it was like a urine-soaked crotchal area. It went up a little bit, like where his little wee-wee would sit, and then down just the left side. I don't know if it was like his creative free-range childhood. Maybe his parents didn't leave a lot of time for potty training. You know, they were just like, imagine a choo-choo train's going down your pants and that's where your pee-pee goes. I don't know. I don't get it. Now, Brett, what makes me hate him, dare I say more than John Frasetic hyphen Dr. Jessica, is that he has no right to be cocky. Brett is not cute at all. His mouth is gross. I'm telling you, look at his teeth. There's like calcifications and plaque all over him. It looks like he's got patches of dry skin or a rash all under a real patchy, poorly grown blonde beard. And I can just smell, I know this for a fact, I can just smell his old boxers from over here, because you know he's still wearing his grungy old boxers from The Gap because they reckon back to his golden age of varsity football camp or some shit. And did you see him scarfing down that sandwich? He simultaneously chewed, burped, and swallowed all at the same time with a beer. It was repulsive. And he was talking with his mouth full at the same time. And that in and of itself is a deal breaker. You know, unless you are choking, trying to scream for help, your mouth should never, ever be open while food is in it. Now then, I haven't even gotten to the best part. Brett weasels up to Henry's friend, this real pretty young woman, and he was so into himself that he was totally blind that she was blowing him off. Like, her back was fully turned away from him, and he's tapping her on the shoulder like, hey, hey, over here, hey, can you hear me? And she's like, yeah, I can hear you, and I can probably smell your burp breath too. You know, even Henry was like, oh God, you guys don't leave me alone with him. The two girls checked out, and he's like, yeah, so what'd you guys say? You're calling me? Oh yeah, I'm coming. I'm sure Brett realized he probably wasn't the coolest guy in the room at that point, which is why he ran away like a little bitch who wasn't getting his ass kicked anymore and jumped into whoever's car that was that sped him out of there. And good, no one wanted you there anyway. All right, now the bachelor Brett party. Amelia. Oh my God, that just made me think of Amelia Bedelia. I loved those books. Well, looks like she has never done her makeup before. Like, she found probably my old generic caboodle kit and she put on all the things she found inside. Like the glitter she had on her eyeshadow or under her eyes. It very well could have been Wet n' Wild nail polish. She doesn't know what the hell she's doing, but that was nothing compared to what Amani was wearing. She looks so much older than she is because I think she's going for a retro 80s kind of thing. But she wears things that didn't even look good in the 80s. When she went to go pick out dresses, she was wearing this big oversized blazer with huge shoulder pads, gold buttons, and it was that really exaggerated, large plaid. I hope you know what I'm talking about. And then at this bachelorette party, she had this strapless dress, a knockoff Chanel kind of thing. And it had sleeve gloves, like a full sleeve, but no connection between the bicep area and the shoulder. It was just terrible. So the ladies go to another Airbnb or something, and they get a stripper. But this guy was busted. His body was fine, but he half-assed it on the firefighter costume. He had the jacket, but then he went for jeans and generic Timberlands. If you're going to come in and be my stripper, I want an accurate, flammable grade head-to-toe getup. I mean, come on. A real firefighter would never wear denim. You know how flammable that is? Obviously, I just think male strippers are disgusting because, gross, he's probably got all sorts of different bodily fluids all over him. I don't get it. But in saying that, even me, I wouldn't start pouting like Christina did. I thought that was so ridiculous. If you don't like it and you don't want the guy grinding up against you, just say, hey, I'm going to go outside. I'm going to get some fresh air and leave it at that. You don't have to be a Debbie Downer. I mean, if it were me, I wouldn't even leave the room. I would have just sat there and I'd be like, oh my God, you guys, this is terrible. I'd probably be covering my eyes, but laughing at the same time, or cheering him on to go hump my friend because, you know, I'm kind of like mean like that. So I just thought that was kind of ridiculous, her little pity party tantrum she threw. Now let's jump to the wedding day. The first couple to be married is Karen and my boyfriend-to-be, but he doesn't know it, Miles. Miles is looking so damn good in that tux, and he gets all kinds of emotional when he's talking to his mom and his sister. I just love him, which means I'm probably going to be severely disappointed by the end of this season. On the flip side, Karen is a mess. She's crying. She's scared. She doesn't want to get out of bed. And why? Well, she got a text that she thinks she wasn't supposed to get from a producer, and it had his name, Miles, in it. So she pulled a little Jody, and she found his Instagram and dug into it. She said that he isn't her type and that he's too emotional, but really, Karen, come on. Miles is a good-looking guy. I can see her being freaked out if she pulled up, like, Brett's photo. She wanted to run for the hills because she saw Bennett with his ugly red hat that he wanted to wear. That I can understand, but it's Miles. Well, she hasn't told anyone but this producer that she knows who her groom is, and she isn't sure that she can do any of this now. But obviously, we know that she is going to marry him because we see it in the previews. But my question is, and I'm sure the question that you are all wondering too, is, was it really an accidental text she received? This is the first time in Married at First Sight history, as far as I know, that someone has found out who the groom is before they walked down the aisle. So what better season opener than someone cracking the code, right? I think they sent her that text on purpose as like a little experiment of their own. So the season looks really good. It always takes me an episode or two to get in the swing of things, but I'm really liking this cast so far, these couples so far, except Brett, but I mean, he's like a hate watch. It's always fun. I wish they would cut these episodes down to an hour because with the 2-hour episodes, it takes me like three and a half hours to watch them because I'm always pausing, going back, especially when we have an incontinent groom. Okay, take a very quick break with me and then I'm going to be back with Love After Lockup and 90 Day Fiancé. Are you feeling the stress from working at home, or maybe you're having trouble sleeping or have some anxiety like me? Trust me, you are not alone. I started taking CBD last year for my generalized anxiety, but it wasn't until I tried Feel CBD that I finally understood what everyone was talking about. Now, I have a great prescription that I take every day for anxiety, but it's not a miracle pill. Feel CBD is the perfect addition to my anxiety toolkit. Just a dropper full under my tongue, and that's it. I wish I could be that person that does some downward dog, do some yoga, find my inner zen, but that's just not me. I don't have the time nor a place in my house these days to pull that off. If you're wondering how you feel when you take CBD, if you're new to it like I was, everyone is probably a little different, but for me, I find myself breathing deeper, my heart isn't racing, I don't feel like I'm this close to snapping at someone all day. With Feels, you're getting premium CBD. It doesn't have a bunch of fillers in it. It's just all natural CBD grown by farmers right here in the US. It's the real deal. It's not a bunch of junk that you're chewing when you get a cheap gummy over the counter. There's no high, you're not going to feel dizzy or fuzzy. It's just a quieting of the storm. Why not try Feels for pain management or even sleeplessness? Because Feels offers all different strengths of CBD. I subscribe and I get the 2400 milligram every month because I need a little more power to punch my stress and anxiety down, but there's a strength for everyone. Members get 30% off automatically, which costs you nothing extra. And if you're ever unsure what strength to get or you want to pause, cancel, change anything, no strings attached. They make it so easy. Why not try a bottle of Feels? You're not going to regret it. Or try a flight with all three strengths for only $20. Find the best fit for you. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. Become a member by going to feels.com/realityTV, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's Feels, F-E-A-L-S.com/realityTV to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Link is in the show notes one more time, feels.com/realityv. Oh, what a gift WeTV has given us. I don't know if we've ever had as large of a cast, as many criminals as we have this season. I can't wait for it. And I think this episode, we only met maybe four or five of the couples, and there seem to be another four or five that we haven't even gotten to. So, God, just enjoy and savor every moment, because we're going to be having a dry spell of reality shows in a couple months. So I'm going to start with John and Christiana, because he is going to be de Bella de Ball this season. He's a fucking mess. So John is 46. He's the one with the really long hair. We later see him wearing some sort of My Little Pony shirt with like purple ribbons and shit. He is a youth service professional, whatever the hell that is. And Christiana is 35, quite a bit younger than him. She's in prison for burglary in the second degree. We meet John, who is sitting at his kitchen table, casually showing off his Eagle Wing powwow regalia. And it's not the only Eagle Wing he's got hanging around. Okay, brag much, John. Rub it in, why don't you? Mr. Eagle Wing bags over here. Too bad his Eagle Wings are stored in a garbage bag in his freezer. But who am I to talk? John is half Native American, and he follows all the traditional beliefs of the Lakota, including freezing that garbage bag of Eagle Wings in the same rusted freezer as his Tyson breaded chicken nuggets and great value Walmart brand ice cream. But hold that thought. His smartphone is ringing. Yeah, he's got a smartphone and Eagle Wings. Time to meet Christiana, who's ringing him up from prison. She's just had two cups of coffee, so she's a little jittery from the coffee. Yeah, that Senka can really jack you up. We've all been there, right? Well, in two more days, Christiana is going to get out, and she can't wait to bleep John's bleep. Pretty sure she said, freeze your wing, because John got really excited. But, you know, I don't want to make any assumptions. Anywho, John's got many much things to do, so he's got to skedaddle and get off the phone with Christiana. I really, truly hope. Actually, you know what? Wait, where is he from? Iowa? Okay, so maybe that's why I picked up on it. I'm hoping someone else picked up on the way that John speaks exclusively in dad lingo. He answered the phone when Christiana called with, how goes it? And then he followed that up with that, well, I got many much things to do today, so I got to get going. And, you know, he's about to throw out a, my dogs are barking. It's going to come out of his mouth, I'm just telling you. Some more things to know about John is that he's been married four times and probably been engaged three times. Oh, scratch that. See what I mean? Dad speak. Make that two times. Things are different with Christiana from these two times, though, because he's in love with her, and love can make it through almost anything. Keyword, almost. But John's got a plan for Christiana's release day that she doesn't know about yet. You see, he's going to build a wedding chapel, his words, on his truck and a honeymoon suite in the back. With a mattress for sex. Get it? Good thing his brother named Cordell comes to help build this, because I don't know if you guys know this, but brother Cordell mastered the Wacoma Burger Pit Challenge. Pretty sure that means something, because I don't think anyone could just wear that t-shirt around town for nothing. The only kink in this plan is that Christiana has to live in a halfway house after she gets released, so you know, time is of the essence. Speaking of essence, I'm pretty sure we can all smell the mildew on John's clothes, because he's absolutely that guy that leaves his wash in the washing machine. It gets all stinky. And of course, top that off with some nicotine breath and whatever the hell kind of moles are growing all over his face. Now, fast forward to meeting John's daughter, and she walks in and Dad says, hey, what's up, chicken? Chicken would be Sapphire, one of Jod's children. Now, how many children does John have? Let's ask him. Let's see. Tyler, Heaven, Elijah, Sapphire, Sarah, Clarissa, Abram. Okay, so 8 children, but Clarissa and Abram still live at home with me. Okay, I don't know if I missed something, or maybe there's a child missing under the honeymoon suite in John's back of his car, but I only counted 7 kids. How John knows the recipe for bear root tea off the top of his head, but he's got to think hard to remember how many kids he has, that's concerning. Okay, now, you really want to know what I jotted down in my notes when I was watching at this point? I wrote down, John, slimy schemer, doesn't know how many kids he has, doesn't seem sincere or honest at all. Now, right after I wrote that down, bam, his daughter comes in with, well, when you served time, when you got out of prison, and I was like, oh, okay, let's see if we can put 2 and 2 together here, or 2 and 5, according to John's math. What is it that he was in prison for? Well, scamming. Of course, he's a liar, and he's always chasing that thrill, I bet. You know, he's always got to have something new, some sort of drama or chaos in his life. Seems like he's probably the type to gamble a lot, or, I don't know, pawn things off. I just get that vibe from him. Sapphire, his daughter, seems really sweet, though, and I really like her as our voice of reason. Although, from the previews, it looks like she's going to get really taken for a ride. It's going to get emotional here. But let's just enjoy it while it lasts. Okay, Lindsay and Scott. Lindsay is 27. She is in prison for possession of meth and a firearm. Scott is 51, a business owner. And I'm not going to really talk about them too much because I recapped their intro on this episode on a Patreon episode with my girl Sharita. Mostly, we just need to know that Scott is an idiot. Lindsay's going to scam him. I would love to see the credentials of this interior designer, but I love the shade she was throwing at him. And I think Scott's issue with his lip, I know everyone's talking about this, but it seems to me like he had some sort of reconstructive surgery for a cleft palate. It just strikes me as that. All right, Maurice and Jessica. Again, I recapped a good portion of their scenes this episode on that Patreon episode, so you can go and check that out. Maurice is 26. He is in prison for burglary in the first degree. He's been there for 7 years. And Jessica is 33, has a very, I don't know if it's like a vocal fry or a very grating voice on her. Something's weird with her vocal cords. And she's 33 and a marketing consultant. So I'm going to jump ahead to what we did not see during the first look. And that's when Jessica is parked in front of her sister's house. So she hasn't seen the sister in over 4 years, and she's trying not to see her by driving by and parking right in front of her house. There's got to be more to this chick's story. Sharita, who recapped the episode with me, she's the host of Say What She podcast, she speculated that Jessica had some sort of addiction. It seemed to her like she was under the influence of some sort of downer or pills or opioids or something. And now I'm seeing that the more we talk to Jessica, the more glazed over or just out of it she seems. She doesn't seem like she's a normal 33-year-old. Just doesn't add up, especially this whole issue with the sister. She said they were close her entire life, but after she started a relationship with Maurice and they got married, her sister completely cut her off. I want to believe that it's not because of racism, because she married someone who is not white, but something tells me maybe Jessica would take advantage of her sister or stole from her, has something to do with drugs and her using drugs maybe around her niece. Either way, I think Sharita was right. There's got to be some sort of deep, dark history for that fracture relationship. All right, let's talk about Sean and Destiny. Sean is 45. He's a general manager. And Destiny is 28. She's in prison for escape, stolen property, possession of drugs, and she's been in prison for 2 years. Sean looks so freaking familiar to me. It's kind of scary. I've been racking my brain for days now. I'm trying to come up with someone maybe on a different show who looks like him. I can't think of anything. So now I'm just convinced, like, I know him personally somehow. And to me, he looks like a Mark, not a Sean. I told you, I must know someone named Mark who looks like him. It's going to drive me crazy until I figure it out. But enough about me. Sean, not Mark, is a father to 6 kids, and he's in love with Destiny. And the only thing I can say about Destiny is she's a real bossy bitch. I couldn't tell you what she looks like because we don't get to see her. In every photo they show of her, she looks completely different. Sometimes she's blonde, sometimes she's brunette, sometimes there's, you know, bunny ear filters, and other times she's laid out on a bed with airbrush font all around her. I don't know. I'm with Hector. He's gonna die. This bitch seems off, and she's got quite the temper. Think about it. When she called up Sean, she had to have known that he was being filmed. Of course he's gonna say, oh yeah, the Love After Lockup people are gonna be at my work. They're gonna be filming us. So when she called him demanding that he go put a down payment on the relationship, whatever the hell that means, you think that she'd at least try to sound sweet, you know, just be like, oh, hey, I'm going to be getting out. Do you think you go check this out? But no, she's just yelling and ranting and raving and then just hangs up on him. Now, of course, I immediately start thinking about Sean's ex-wife and his 6 kids who are going to be watching this. How do you think they're going to react when they find out that he's thrown away $35,000 to a woman that he's never even seen in person? And top that off with the other $50,000 that he's going to lose, because we all know Destiny's going to go screw him over. He talked to this bail bondsman, and that guy was practically begging him to walk away. He's like, seriously, dude, run. I don't want your money. Use your brain. Walk away. Don't do this. But of course, you know, Sean's the perfect victim because his dad was in prison. It's just this whole cycle. And, you know, it's Love After Lockup. They all make bad decisions. Now, finally, we meet our last couple in this episode, and it is Chevelle, who's 31. She's a business owner. And Quaylon, who's 29. He's in prison for 12 years for robbery. Now, Quaylon calls himself Quaylon, and Chevelle calls him Quaylon. Oh, there's another whole thing with their names later, but let me just introduce you to them first. Chevelle is a single mom. She's got a 5-year-old daughter who's adorable, of course. And since her daughter's father is out of the picture, Chevelle really thought long and hard about this. And she's like, you know what? What better man to marry and step into the father role than a man who's been in prison for 12 years? Couldn't have picked a better guy. Now, I don't want to knock Quaylon yet because we don't really know that much about him. It does break my heart to know that he's a man now. He's 30. He's been in prison since he was 17. Think about who you were at 17 and compare that to when you were 30. There's no way in hell Quaylon can come out of this, number one, without any trauma. I mean, we see the scary shit that happens in prison. Also, his maturity level cannot be where a husband and a father need to be. How is he going to fulfill anything that he needs or even wants to do for Chevelle? Because he's basically at a 17-year-old's maturity level. You know, time kind of froze when he went into prison. I hope that makes sense. Again, we don't really know anything about them, but I feel like the odds are automatically stacked against both Quaylon and Chevelle. Now, then we learn about this previous rapping career that Chevelle had. It was really random. It was just kind of thrown out there, plopped in her lap. And I was like, okay, great. What are we supposed to be doing with this information now? Totally random. I guess the same way Quaylon just threw out this information like, hey, by the way, Chevelle, you're going to be picking up my mom and driving her down here when I get released. No, the hell I am. I'm sorry, but his mom can go get an Uber or someone else in his family can drive her. I thought that was really shitty. So maybe I don't feel badly for Quaylon. Now, this name thing I don't understand because Quaylon and Quaylon, yes, it's close, but it's not the same name. And Quaylon, I'm going to call him that because that's what he calls himself, he doesn't spell Chevelle's name correctly. She spells it S-H-E-V-E-L. And in a letter he wrote to her, he spells it C-H-E-V-E-L-L-E. Big difference. Big mistake. Huge. I think it's just a general rule. You can't say you're in a serious relationship with someone if you don't know how to spell each other's names. First step in getting engaged, you gotta take a spelling test to make sure that you're spelling your fiancé's name correctly.
Diabolical.
Vengeance.
Betrayal.
Bad hair.
Leaning.
Hi, everyone. This is Kimberly.
And this is Katie.
And we have a weekly podcast called A Date with Dateline, a recap of Dateline episodes. We talk about important issues like grainy surveillance footage, cell phone towers, Andrea Canning's white jeans, and Mankey's hankies. We delve into the details of any victim who's ever loved life or lit up a room.
So find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and iTunes to make a date with Dateline.
And remember, don't watch alone.
A Date with Dateline is a podcast hosted by two professional amateur true crime TV experts with no formal training but evidence lockers filled with snark and uninformed opinions.
All right, the light of our Monday evenings, 90 Day Fiancé, The Other Way. Of course, I'm talking about Kenneth and Armando because these two are so freaking adorable. Who is it? Armando said, "You made my dream come true." And then Kenneth said, "You made mine." I felt the same way about the shrimp fajitas on the table. Those looked fucking delicious. But really, these two have given heart and soul to 90 Day Fiancé. We haven't really had a couple like them before. And between that kind of cheesy preschoolish sign that Armando made and that little construction paper present he had for him, it's just so sweet and pure. They're just perfect together. And it will kill me. It'll gut me like a fish if they ever have so much as a disagreement on camera, because they're really too good for this show. We don't deserve them. They've reinvigorated my love for this show, the unpredictability of the show, because really we expect them all to be train wrecks. But these two have restored my belief in really love. Now, Kenneth, oh boy, it's a little troubling, I'm not going to lie. He has restored my certainty that everything is indeed lava. I mean, he gets me. I understand him on a deeper level because I see germs everywhere, but I disagree with him on several things. First of all, that street candy is fine. I'm never going to say no to gummy peaches, and horchata is delicious. But watching him so uncomfortable in these new surroundings and not speaking the language, yeah, I mean, he's casting judgment on things. I don't think he was being racist or ignorant. Maybe I'm partial. I don't think he was like an ignorant American. I just think he's in culture shock. He's very uncomfortable because he's inexperienced in speaking the language. And maybe I'm partial because not only do I love Kenneth, but he also reminds me of my oldest sister. Okay, hear me out. You guys think I'm bad with germs and everything? My sister is 100 times worse. And when you can feel my anxiety, imagine that times 50 unmedicated, and you will get the gist of what it's like being around my oldest sister. Like, she is very loving. She's sweet. She says she loves having everyone over to her house, but she will watch you like a freaking hawk. Like, you go to throw away a napkin and you know she's laser focused on you, making sure that the napkin drops dead center in the can and doesn't brush the edges. You know, you stand up from her couch, she's chopping the pillow that you leaned on back into shape before you've even stood up. Her mask she's wearing right now, I kid you not, she had someone make her a mask with like drapery fabric, like that thick silk kind of fabric. And it's so thick that you cannot hear her through it. I'm super germophobic, especially with this COVID stuff, but she's a whole other level. Like, I will open doors with my elbow, or of course I flush toilets with my foot and I will push with my back and stuff, but she will go walking into a store by just kicking it open with her foot. She won't even go with an elbow. So I understand where people might think it's coming from a place of ignorance or judgment, but I think it's just kind of a personality quirk. And in Kenneth's case, I think it's ease into it. And once he learns the language, and I'm sure they're probably going to find an apartment in another city he's more comfortable, he'll ease into it. I did think it was pretty funny that he asked what kind of food that they were eating. And the one guy's like, "What do you think? It's going to be Italian over here?" But I understand what Kenneth was saying too. Like, is the only cuisine they eat in Mexico Mexican food? I mean, we do have Italian restaurants, Asian restaurants, etc. So he does have a point. But, you know, when you're walking around and the sign says, you know, Pablo's Taqueria or something, it's pretty obvious, Kenneth. Come on. And I would say that burrito looked damn delicious to me. So there you go, Kenneth. Best of luck. I can't wait to see you next week when Hannah comes to see them. Okay, moving on to Jenny and Sumit. They've finally made their way to Sumit's lawyer because Jenny is still needing that proof from Sumit that he's telling her the truth, that he's getting a divorce and it's going to be final. Turns out, he is getting a divorce. It should be over in a couple months. But here's the thing. Even if he gets a divorce, Sumit's family can still object, and they will object, if Jenny and Sumit move forward and they want to get married, which to me begs the question, why is Jenny still there? I mean, even Sumit's friends, who end up liking Jenny after they meet her, the wives bailed, but they liked her, they're telling her Sumit's going to always be fighting with his family. For lack of a better phrase, it's a lifelong sentence for Sumit. His parents are never going to let up on the fact that he's having a relationship with her. So really the question Jenny should be asking herself is, am I willing to live in this constant friction and turmoil here in India or not? And I wish Jenny would see, all right, I'm going to go deep here a little bit. I'm hoping this is what her daughters are telling her. I wish she would see that she's got some power in this relationship too. I think she's forgetting that. She puts so much importance on what Sumit is going through and how does he feel about her? What's his family doing? What is he doing? Instead, she needs to figure out what she's willing to live with and what she needs and requires from Sumit, because if his circumstances don't change, what is she willing to live with? And I'd like her to make that decision by like next week, if at all possible. That would be great. Okay, let's move on to, let's go Devin and Jihoon. I'm going to speak from my heart. I hope that your heart is maybe feeling the same way so I don't sound like a monster. Here we go. Mother Jihoon is kind of a bitch. She is. I'm sorry. She keeps throwing things out there, blaming everything on Devin. Like, why is she so mad? Why is she going to leave? She just gave up so quickly. Well, yeah, maybe she's doing all that because she's broke and she's stuck in the middle of freaking Korea because your son lied to her. I can see how Jihoon turned out the way he did now because Mother Jihoon doesn't really take accountability, responsibility for anything. She doesn't talk about her feelings, Jihoon's feelings, Devin's feelings. They don't talk about good decision making. She just is like, oh, well, do better. That's all. Just stop crying. Get over it. Change. That's all you got to do. At one point, I think she was laughing about it. I could be getting lost in translation or a cultural misunderstanding, but I'm definitely getting a little bit, at least, of a wacky mom vibe from Mother Jihoon. Something tells me Father Jihoon is probably the steady force, like the rock in the family. He just keeps the peace between everyone. Probably a lot of sweeping things under the rug because we don't want to upset her. All right, let's move on to Yazin and Brittany because that's sadly all we saw of Jihoon and Devin this week. All right, Brittany had a rough week, you guys. I think we saw her spiral from a state of confusion to fear, which I would have been too. That was pretty damn scary when Yazin's mom was screaming at her. Then she got frustrated in the car. And then I think she just had a legit clinical panic attack. I mean, she was going through it. She was unprepared for sure. And I think she realized she made a huge mistake. I don't care what the apartment looked like. She was all impressed by it. I mean, the rose petals, that's not going to change Yazin's religion or his culture. Just like Brittany dressing more modestly isn't going to change her personality or who she is. She very quickly overlooks things that she doesn't want to deal with, which, I mean, is why she just up and moved to Jordan. These two are just doomed. It's never going to happen. They're not going to end up together. All right, who's in the mood for some cheese? Yes, it's Tim and Melissa because today is the day I moved to Colombia. Oh, cheese stick. It looks like cheese stick takes his face to a cheese grater because he is rashy all the time. He looks a lot like, well, he doesn't look like him, but he's got the same skin issue as Brett on Married at First Sight. He should probably get some hydrocortisone. Actually, he could get it over the counter in Brazil because I don't think they require prescriptions. Anyhow, This week, we finally get to meet the soon-to-be Mrs. Cheese Stick, Maliza. This chick has got her shit together. I love a gal who takes pride in working. She's not waiting around for Cheese Stick or anyone else to swoop in and turn her into Cinderella. You know, she is not Larissa. She's not like any other Brazilian woman that we've met on this show before. Something she said, though, made me cringe. And ooh, I think it's really sad state if she truly believes this. She said she's giving Tim another chance because she's already spent years and years with him, so she owes him a second chance. Ugh, I hope she's not thinking she should just settle because she's already invested so much time with him. And as a matter of fact, if you spent, let's say, 3 years with someone and you're still not sure if you can trust them, that's a signal you probably just need to move on, especially if he's moving down there. Yeah, it's a big move for him, but it's a big move on your part too, because you know Tim's going to be relying on Maliza for everything. So if she's already got resentment, that's just going to amplify it. Okay, well, that's a really positive and uplifting place to leave it, but it is what it is. When in Brazil. All right, you guys, thanks for joining me this week. Make sure to check out my sponsor, Feels, links in the show notes. I was on an episode of Blonde Unfiltered Podcast with my friend Jess. Be sure to check out Total Request Podcast and my Patreon. Links are in the show notes. You guys, take care of yourselves. Keep washing your hands. Wear a damn mask. And of course, stay salty.